This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show. Thursday, June the 17th, put together by producer Shruti Rajendran. Morning, Shruts.
Morning.
Yeah, it was kind of hit and miss today. We were kind of funny and interesting in parts, but there were some lean patches as well where we were just talking nonsense. Have you managed to cobble together 35 minutes worth listening to?
Yes, I would say your 7 hour was the best hour, so we've just basically put that together.
Oh, yes. First cup of coffee kicks in, sit between 7 and 8, you're on form.
Yeah.
By 8, you're wilting. By 9, 10, 11, it's just, it's Thursday, you just want to go home, don't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
So the boss isn't listening. Right, so here we go. Going to start with Serena Kelly with the latest on COVID cases, as we always do. Then, I like this one, Bottlegate at the Euros. Just remind us what the story was.
Well, it started with Cristiano Ronaldo when he famously removed two bottles of Coca-Cola that was kept in front of him during a press conference and just said agua instead, promoting drinking water. And then Paul Pogba, when he was sitting with a non-alcoholic beverage of a certain brand, was in front of him. He's, of course, Muslim. So he took the bottle and he removed it as well. So it's the story about what should advertisers be doing if, you know, this isn't working.
We are going to hear from Polly Williams, who's with the marketing communications consultancy Tish Tash here in Dubai. We'll get Tom's take on her Bottlegate as well. We got a big focus on the Fed. We had a meeting last night. We'll hear from Jerome Powell and Khadija Hack's take on what was said. And Brandy's been looking into some data, kind of confirming what we already suspected, the rise of online retail. But it's come from the guys at Majid Al Futtaim. They know retail.
Yeah.
Better than anyone, arguably. Finally, fascinating interview with Dr. Howard Podolsky of Cambridge Medical and Rehab Centre, speaking to Brandy Scott. So many questions we've been getting in about mixing and matching vaccines. What was that word? Homologous?
I'm not going to try.
I'm not going to try either. Howard's your man. He's brilliant. He's up a little bit later on. First, though, here is Serena Kelly.
Ask Serena.
All right, Rains?
Yep, not bad. Thursday, all good.
When is a traffic light not a robot? When is a traffic light a robot or a robot a traffic light?
Is this one of the questions you were given last night to ask me?
No, well, we've just been talking Galileo and theories of existence and things like that on the show, so I thought we might get all existential.
It's like, what, when a tree falls in the forest, does it actually make a sound if no one's around to hear it? Yeah.
Nice T-shirt, by the way.
Thanks! Yeah, I'm wearing a jacket.
You are sporting yet more movie memorabilia. Let's get to the matter in hand, cases and vaccines. Let's start with the case numbers.
So leading up to yesterday's announcement of the latest case figures, Monday you had 1,837 new cases. Tuesday, after more than 229,000 tests were conducted, you had 2,127. Yesterday, after more than 227,600 tests were conducted, new cases 2,011. Recoveries, 1,976 were announced, four fatalities as well. So total deaths in the country, 1,738. And active cases up from 19,077. We are currently 19,108.
Vaccine numbers, please.
We've crossed another milestone. More than 14 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine have been administered in the country so far. Over the 24-hour period, Tuesday, you saw more than 104,000 doses administered, more than 116,000 on Monday. Currently, distribution rate of 142.24 doses per 100 people.
So that leads me on quite nicely to my next question, which is about this. You just mentioned it in the news there about this new COVID treatment. So is that a vaccine?
No, it is an antiviral antibody treatment solution. So it's not a vaccine. It's for basically anybody who is positive for COVID-19 and could be a severe case. This drug will assist patients in their recovery.
Okay.
So it's Sotrovimab. Abu Dhabi's become the first city in the world to receive the newest antiviral treatment for COVID-19. If you recall, end of May, we were discussing how the UAE became the first country in the world to license its use. So it's been approved for emergency use. The US FDA has done the same. So the first shipment arrived at Abu Dhabi Airport yesterday. As I said, it's an early antibody treatment solution, and it's for certain categories of coronavirus patients in the UAE. So studies have shown it can help prevent hospitalization and death in 85% of early detected cases. It's proven effective so far against the various variants that are present. There is certain criteria for its use. It'll be made available for adults and children above the age of 12 and those who are at risk of suffering from severe COVID-19 symptoms. So this is for very intense cases. Patients in the UAE will be among the first in the world able to access the new therapy.
So that's arrived in Abu Dhabi, arrived in the UAE for the very first time. We've also had the vaccine study on children in the UAE. We had news of this earlier on this week. That continues?
Yes. So last week we spoke about how the UAE had started the trial. So this is the Sinopharm COVID-19 vaccine. It is a study on how it affects the immune system. It's for children aged 3 to 17. This is one of many because many are being conducted across the globe. So we got a behind-the-scenes look at those taking part. And the young members of the Abu Dhabi ruling family have joined the study. Sheikh Thayyab bin Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, chairman of the Abu Dhabi Crown Prince's Court, he accompanied his children, nieces and nephews because they are now participating in the trial. You can see a video. It's up on the Air and News Centre. You can see them having their blood pressure taken, their heart rate. There is a blood test. They also need to take a PCR test and then they get the jab and they're observed for about 30 minutes. So the study itself, they're looking at around 900 volunteers taking part, and health officials basically will be checking in with the parents on a weekly basis.
That is what's happening in terms of the vaccine studies. Sehar have taken to social media and otherwise to clear up a rumour or two.
Yeah, they have confirmed there is no truth to reports about them revising the cost of COVID-19 PCR tests. It seems that there were rumours online about how they may have revised charges. So they've confirmed the price is still 65 dirhams, and that's consistent across its network of screening facilities. And they also just issued a reminder saying, should they make any changes in the future, this will be communicated via Sehar's official channels.
You've also got news of a UAE carrier teaming up with Al Hosn.
Yeah, it's Fly Dubai. They are now working with Al Hosn, the app. It's basically to help passengers verify their COVID-19 medical records digitally. So citizens, residents and visitors, they'll be able to use the app during check-in without having to present a printed copy of their negative PCR test report. It's currently available for Fly Dubai passengers departing from Dubai International's DXB Terminal 2. They are planning to implement it for flights departing from Terminal 3. This will be done in phases. And of course, you know, obviously we now can see Al Hosn app. It is the official COVID-19 results app for the UAE, but you do need it for movement in and around Abu Dhabi with the green pass that came into effect on Sunday. It's working as that traffic light color-coded system. So it verifies your details regarding PCR tests and also vaccination status as well.
And finally, we turn our attention to the US. I like this story. I did a story about this just last night on the news. It was one that I didn't see coming, but it is a nice story. The UAE and the USA.
Yep. New York State has declared December 2nd, 2021 as Emirati Day. So it's in recognition of the country's upcoming 50th anniversary. So the resolution was put forward by Dubai-born Senator Kevin Thomas. And Abdallah Shaheen, the Consul General of the UAE in New York, thanked him for introducing the resolution, saying this December, the UAE will not only celebrate its 50th anniversary, we will also celebrate 50 years of friendship with the state of New York. So that'll be quite nice to see happen on December 2nd.
Yeah, so I watched the video of Senator Thomas, who was the first American Indian. He's of Malayali descent. He's now representing the state of New York at the moment, the 6th district over there. But when he got up in front of the Senate to give his piece about why they should make this change, he sort of gave a potted history of the UAE as well. It was very eloquent. It was really nice. And it was just nice to see somebody who was obviously born here, spent the first 10 years of his life here, still being an ambassador, if you like, for the UAE on the bigger scale.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's happening over in the States. That's what's happening here. That's prompted a number of questions. We don't have time to answer them. But in the meantime, if people want more,
just check out the ARN News Centre app or all our socials.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusive
exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right then, let's talk marketing and sponsorship now, in particular Bottlegate at the European Football Championships, which are ongoing at the moment. Joining us on the line with some perspective is the Managing Director of the Marketing and Communications Agency, Tish Tash, Polly Williams. Morning, Polly.
Good morning.
Joining us on Microsoft Teams. Good to see you as well as hear from you. Polly, we've asked you to join us to give us your thoughts on what we're calling Bottlegate. Not one, but two incidents over the past couple of days at the European Football Championships. Cristiano Ronaldo, the biggest star in football at the moment, removing two bottles of Coca-Cola from his press conference. Coca-Cola is an official sponsor. And then the following day, Paul Pogba, again, one of the biggest stars in football, removing a beverage, a drink from his press conference. Now, it was a non-alcoholic beverage, it turns out, but Paul Pogba is a Muslim and didn't want to be associated with that drink. What did you make of this, Polly, as someone who works in branding and marketing and sponsorship?
I think, you know, these things happen, and I think, you know, it was unfortunate for Coca-Cola. I think that at the end of the day, it could have been a lot worse. I think Coca-Cola's response actually really helped to kind of stem the tide of any potential real issues evolving from it. I think in reality, some of the marketing that is being used is just quite lazy these days. And we need to, a lot of these brands need to step up when they're looking at sponsorship and other forms of marketing and start to think a little bit more creatively and do things a bit differently, because consumers just aren't behaving the way they used to. And we have to, you know, be dealing with celebrities and, you know, football players with egos and all sorts of things. And these football players have a lot of power and influence. So you really need to think about how you're marketing beforehand. And I think, unfortunately, with the Coca-Cola incident, it was very much lazy marketing on their behalf.
Okay, lazy marketing in what sense? You think just putting a couple of bottles of your drink on the table, we need, you know, we've moved beyond that pop idol type marketing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as you say, I think it was as simple as here's some bottles on a table. And I think they've been doing that. You know, Coca-Cola's been sponsoring the World Cup since the 80s, and the same thing has been happening. And we need to potentially think about how we move beyond that. You know, you've got lots of different players sitting down, moving through, and especially, you know, looking at the Pogba incident, that was a very insensitive thing to do. And you need to be thinking about who's the person sitting behind that table. It's no longer just about the sponsorship. The players have got more influence and more power potentially than the brand themselves, and they rely on these you know, football players, celebrities to support with endorsements. So they need to just think differently about some of their marketing, I would say.
So what tips would you give them? You work for Tish Tash now. That's a marketing consultancy. So you have multiple clients. Previously, I was looking at your CV. You worked, I think, at LVMH. You worked at Procter & Gamble as well. Some of the world's largest luxury and FMCG brands. What should the playbook be?
I think now, look, even especially in a kind of COVID, post-COVID world, what everybody's looking for is personalized experiences. Now, I know when you're looking at something like the football and it's a huge tournament and there's lots of people coming through, that's a little bit harder to do. But any place where you can really personalize the experience, ultimately people buy into people. And when you look at the reaction of what happened to Coca-Cola's market share straight after Ronaldo, you know, did what he did, you can see that people reacted to what he said. Now, of course, he mentioned water. He can't, you know, there's nothing wrong with mentioning water. You can't have anything against water. So, you know, he was very smart in the way that he did it as well. There was no branding on his water bottle. But ultimately, it just shows that people want personalized experiences. And I think a lot of the things that we do now, like just having your brand on a step and repeat board at the back for everybody to see, or just placing an item in front of people. Yes, okay, after a few hours, people might go, oh, I am a little bit thirsty, maybe I'll get a Coke. But it's not that simple anymore. Consumers are not that simple. They're complex creatures. So you need to think about how you can personalize those experiences for everybody, and involve the players, get their buy-in when it comes to the marketing, so that they're supporting your brand and helping you endorse that brand as much as possible. And that's where they'll see positive, you know, increments from the marketing they're doing.
I mean, these major sponsorships of large sporting events have been a staple for what? As long as I'm 49 years old, as long as I can remember. I'm looking at the list of official sponsors now. There's about 10 of them. You've got Coca-Cola's one of them. Booking.com is in there as well. FedEx, the logistics company. TikTok is one of them as well. These sponsorships of major events, the Olympics is around the corner. Have they passed their sell-by date now, do you think?
I think it's amazing how much these sponsorships still cost. I think it's incredible the amount of money the brands will spend. I think ultimately there's still value in them because people are still doing them. I think, you know, I remember one year I was at the Singapore Grand Prix and Emirates Airlines had sponsored the Singapore Grand Prix and not the local airline. And I remember what a huge, you know, what a huge furore that made, you know, having a non-local airline sponsoring, you know, such a big event. And there's just so many ways that it can go wrong now. There's so many things that you can do when you don't have control. Often with these sponsorships, it's, you know, ticking the box. You get this, and this, that's it. You know, they don't have much control. They probably, you know, in the case of Pogba, he maybe didn't know where the bottle was going to go. The brand maybe didn't know. And you just have such little control. So I think they're definitely, I don't know if they're a thing of the past, but there definitely needs to be a shift. And then, you know, you're looking at people like TikTok are sponsoring. Well, they're a very, you know, modern, digitally focused brand. So what they're doing using TikTok and, you know, they're creating a lot of interactive games and a lot of advertising around it that really supports the TikTok brand. I think that that's the way forward. Things like Coca-Cola, who are much more doing the old school way of sponsoring. I think that is a dying form of sponsorship. But look at what TikTok's doing. They are evolving it. They're moving it. If you've seen some of the advertising around there using real people, you know, acting like they're at the football, they are one of the players, kind of using that more interactive element, then that there is room for it, but you do need to start getting creative with it.
Polly, great talk to you. Appreciate your time this morning. It's the voice of Polly Williams, the Managing Director of Tish Tash Marketing and Communications Agency based here in Dubai.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Loads of comments coming in on a variety of subjects, none more so than Richard's last interview with regards to Bottlegate and whatever was in said bottles. A lot of people saying, well, what complete and utter tosh that the footballers in question were in the wrong because of the situation. And then one from Majir, who's been in touch with us as well, saying, hi, to me, Bottlegate is more about sport sponsoring advertising, something that is addictive or harmful for young kids. F1 did away with cigarette advertising in the early 2000s. Isn't this similar?
It is similar because Ronaldo was making the point that sugar is harmful and therefore didn't want to be seen with Coca-Cola. One of the Coke bottles was apparently full sugar. One of them was zero sugar, but he didn't want to be associated with that drink because it is, in his eyes, harmful. And we've all got different definitions, I guess, of what is harmful, what is not. None of us are medical experts, but that's essentially it. It's the same argument for various sponsorships, isn't it? I mean, I'm looking at the list of sponsors. Many of them, honestly, if you look at the list of sponsors, you could have a conscientious objector to pretty much all of them. You've got Booking.com you might struggle with, but, you know, Qatar Airways, you could argue that the airline industry is polluting the skies and you could
carbon
not want
footprint.
To be... carbon footprint. You know, TikTok, social media is damaging kids.
Where do you stop?
Whatever your cause is, it could be yours.
As I made the point during a completely unexpected argument on WhatsApp recently, just because you can't do everything doesn't mean you don't do one thing. I had someone taking me to task for why are we tackling X when we're not, I don't know, feeding every starving child and also banning smoking and. And it's like, well, just because you're not doing everything doesn't mean you don't do one thing. You do the things that you can with the resources that you have available.
This is true.
Let's get on to some of these stories that we are following up on. Rich, we've got thoughts from Khatija Haque.
Yeah, Fed meeting last night. No surprises in that the Fed kept interest rates on hold, which means interest rates in the UAE remain on hold. But the surprise was that they did signal interest rate rises to come. Now, 2023, we might get a couple of interest rate rises. So this is not imminent, but that was the story. Before we hear from Khatija, let's hear from Jay Powell, who's the head of the Fed. Let's hear in particular his comments on the situation regarding unemployment.
Factors related to the pandemic, such as caregiving needs, ongoing fears of the virus, and unemployment insurance payments, appear to be weighing on employment growth. These factors should wane in coming months against a backdrop of rising vaccinations, leading to more rapid gains in employment.
So, Khatija Haque, Chief Economist, Head of Research at Emirates NBD, obviously following not just the announcement closely, but all of the comments from Jerome Powell very closely. We asked it very simply, what did you make of the Fed meeting?
The Federal Reserve kept monetary policy unchanged yesterday, as expected, but they did make significant changes to their economic forecasts and interest rate projections. Both growth and inflation forecasts for 2021 were upgraded quite significantly. Inflation is now expected to average 3.4%. That's the core PCE measure of inflation, compared to 2.4% previously. But there weren't significant changes for 2022 and beyond, which suggests that the Fed still sees inflation as transitory. The dot plot showed the majority of FOMC members now expect at least two rate hikes in 2023, compared with just six at the March meeting. Seven FOMC members also expect at least one rate hike next year.
That's the voice of Khatija Haque, Chief Economist at Emirates NBD, on last night's Fed meeting.
Brandy, you've been delving into a mall report from MAF.
Yeah, I have. Having a look at some research that came out, and we welcome research regardless, don't we? I mean, we like people who put the numbers together for us. We're very excited about some new employment data that's being put together by the BODs in Abu Dhabi, and we hope that they will be sharing it widely. Right, Majid Al Futtaim, the mall people, also the Carrefour people, have launched their first State of the UAE Retail Economy report. Sounds like the sort of thing that would be delivered by a US politician, does it not? We have Elaine Bajani instead. And in fact, this morning we don't even have Elaine Bajani. But here is what it has said. We're buying things. Hmm. We're buying things online. Those habits do seem to have stuck to have some point. But here's a question. 9% of fashion purchases, 8% of grocery sales now taking place online in the UAE. I mean, it's a jump from where we were because we were always lagging the rest of the world when it came to e-commerce adoption. I would argue that that's a lot to do with the way stuff gets delivered here. Three text messages asking your location is enough to put anybody off. That has got better. That is getting better. 8% of grocery sales, though. Do we call that a wave?
I think this is a structural trend, not a short-term blip. And it will change the fabric of society because shopping it's a national sport, isn't it? It's what we do for fun. It's what we do for recreation.
But it's also social.
Exactly.
And that is one of the I don't know. I feel like we're more mall going than maybe in other countries. What is interesting is the spend bouncing back, actually, whether online or offline. Q4 last year, Q1 this year, does seem to have seen a bit of consumer confidence return, with UAE spending by residents up from almost a fifth just from February to March this year.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
All right. Well, we are getting a little bit of medical expertise this morning. The UAE has seen something of a spike in COVID cases over the past few weeks, numbers in the low 2000s, more often than not since the beginning of June. What is behind it? We are joined now by Dr. Howard Podolsky, Group CEO of the Cambridge Medical and Rehabilitation Centre. Dr. Howard, it's lovely to speak to you again.
Great to be with you this morning. Thank you.
What is your theory this morning on our rise in numbers?
You know, that's an excellent question, and I think it's a multifactorial in terms of what's going on right now. We enjoyed an Eid holiday. There was some travel, and we are an international hub, so clearly there was individuals coming in and out of the country that may have inadvertently been carriers potentially of the virus, despite best efforts at screening. The Delta variant, we know, is a highly infectious variant, which is very prominent in India as well as the UK. And that may also be lurking in the background as well. Plus, I think there's a combination of individuals who haven't had the opportunity or have chosen not to get vaccinated yet. And the longer we delay those individuals from getting vaccinated, the longer it's going to take to get more collective immunity that we refer to as herd immunity.
Yeah, Dr. Farida Al-Hosseini, spokeswoman for the state health care sector, did say a couple of days ago that those new mutant strains were a threat, particularly to the unvaccinated. What do we know about what strains we have here in the UAE, Dr. Howard?
We know that the predominant strains that have been circulating for the past year are most likely present and circulating rather throughout the country and throughout the region. And it's suspected that the Delta variant is probably here as well. And it is significantly more infectious than even the most infectious variants to date, which puts those who are not fully vaccinated at significantly more risk and therefore continues to allow the virus to take hold, to continue to spread. And most importantly, as long as we allow the virus to exist, it will continue to mutate. So this is why it's so very important that everyone make an effort to get fully vaccinated.
And in fact, that's one question we've got in from a listener this morning. How are our case numbers rising when we have such high vaccination rates?
That's also an excellent question. Now, most of the almost 13 million or so vaccinations that we provided, many of those were the Sinopharm vaccine, although some were of the others that are currently available, such as Pfizer, BioNTech, for example. And it's possible, keeping in mind, we've been vaccinating for more than a year now in the country, and it is possible that perhaps now is time that we need to start providing more aggressive booster shots for some or many of our higher risk individuals throughout the country, because we know that immunity over time wanes, and this would be an opportunity to stimulate and boost the immune system at this point.
And booster shots and the mixing of vaccines has, of course, been one of the big stories of this week, with the ability to get a third different booster shot. What do we know about the efficacy and the safety of mixing vaccines?
That is the million-dollar question. And what we do know from a few very limited studies so far is that there appears to be some significant efficacy or effectiveness in mixing vaccines, especially at the time of a booster. There's a Spanish study that just was released, and preliminary results suggest that mixing both AstraZeneca and Pfizer, for example, provided a more robust immune response to those individuals than individuals who simply got two doses of the AstraZeneca. Now, this is not to say that the AstraZeneca is not a good vaccine or that only Pfizer should be used. But when we mix and match vaccines, what we call that is a heterologous prime and booster approach. We've used this approach in the past, especially with Ebola virus some years ago, and it works. We know it works well because we're stimulating different parts of the immune system to ultimately give us a stronger immune response over time. So it may very well be that we'll be looking at different types and different companies that provide those boosters for us in the weeks and months to come. I mean, keep in mind, when we get the flu shot annually, we get that from different providers, and they're made up of different types of stimuli and antigens year in and year out to, again, get the most robust immune response that we can. Now, the flip side very quickly is that sometimes, and there's a small study out of the UK looking at this as well, that when we do mix vaccines, we may get a slightly more pronounced side effects. So we may get a few more aches. We may get a low-grade fever for a day. We're not getting infected. We're not getting sick. This is just a more heightened immune response. It tells us that our immune system is working. And that's a good thing. And in a day or two after that booster, we're back to our old selves, and we're protected. And over the next few weeks, we become very well protected.
What do we know about the time frame for doing that?
This is what we're looking at now. Studies are looking at whether the booster should be at 6 months, should it be longer. We're looking at two sides of the coin, if you will. We're looking at both sides of the immune system, the antibodies that we routinely measure, and then the harder to measure, which is the T cell response, which is a much more difficult but very important aspect of our immune system. And that tends to have a much longer memory. So we're still trying to find out whether the time frame should be 6 months, 9 months, 12 months. We're not sure yet. We have a strong sense that there will be a need for boosters. We're seeing that already. That's a good thing. We've done that for many other types of vaccines in the past, and this will likely be no different.
So a question from Blair. I think you've already answered this, but just to clarify, Blair writes in, say, my wife had one AstraZeneca dose 3 months ago, hasn't had a second dose. Is she okay to get something different such as Pfizer? Just to clarify?
Absolutely, Richard. A great question. Generally, after that three-month interval, the immune system is prepared to take on another stimuli, if you will. So theoretically, assuming that the individual is otherwise healthy and has no other immune-compromised conditions, that individual should be safe to receive a booster of a different shot.
Well, we are heading into another holiday season. We have another Eid coming up next month. It's also the time of year, of course, that people in normal times would be hopping on planes and going on holidays, and many will be if they are able to. What does that mean for our collective immunity here in the UAE, and what should we be thinking about?
Most importantly, Brandy, vaccination. Continue. For those who are hesitant, please do it for your family, your loved ones, your friends. Do it for the community, if not for yourself. We still need to socially distance. Mask wearing is still very effective, especially in large spaces with lots of individuals, especially when we travel, for example. So let's not let our guard down now. We're getting close to really getting this in a situation where we can control it. Let's just keep up the pressure.
Dr. Howard Podolsky is the Group CEO of Cambridge Medical and Rehabilitation Centre, speaking to us this morning. Thank you, Dr. Howard, on The Business Breakfast about that rise in case numbers crossing the 2,000 mark that we have seen over the last couple of weeks.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.